Small Town Podcast is made possible by generous support from the Georgia Municipal Association. GMA supports Georgia cities. Small Town Podcast is supported by Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company. Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company is a full-line supplier of products for the water, wastewater, and natural gas industries, and they serve utilities and public works departments in cities, large and small, every day. As a family-owned company with a legacy that began in 1960, let Consolidated Pipe and Supply Company show you that they are dedicated to service.
I hereby call this episode to order.
Hey, small towners, it's Mayor Matt Seal, and thanks for joining me for another episode of Small Town Podcast. We'll continue in our series of small towns in Louisiana with the fourth of our five small towns. We continue to partner with the Louisiana Municipal Association to identify these small towns, and we're so appreciative of Louisiana Economic Development for sponsoring this series. Just as we've done so far, let's first talk with John Gallagher, the executive director of the LMA, who knows some interesting facts about the places all around his state of Louisiana. So, John, last time when I came to Louisiana and I went to some small towns, you were able to kind of give us a little intro about the region of the state where I was going, because we try to explore some different small towns in different parts of Louisiana. And so if people need to know the kind of the character of each of the regions, I'd encourage them to go back to listen to previous episodes and previous seasons and hear about some other great small towns in Louisiana that I've already visited. But you seem to be a wealth of knowledge of little fun facts and tidbits. So I think you've got something about each of the five small towns that I'm going to on this trip. So why don't you share some of those with us?
Sure. Yeah, I do. It drives my wife crazy. We're both from Shreveport. And I joke with her and tell her I can link Shreveport to just about anything in the world.
And somewhere.
The last conversation we had about this, I was able to link Shreveport to the troubles in Northern Ireland. So,
wow.
You know, yes.
Wow.
We'll have to do that one some other time. But I know you're in Vidalia. Vidalia is right across the Mississippi River from Natchez, very historic town. One of the stories I remember from our former director, former Mayor Baton Rouge, Tymen McHugh, Vidalia has the world's largest prefabricated hydroelectric power plant that's sitting on the river. And in order to get to Vidalia, they had to go down up the Mississippi River past Baton Rouge to Vidalia. And it was, of course, had to be brought up by barge. And Tymen said he was one day when they were moving it past Baton Rouge, he was happened to have U.S. Senator Russell Long at the time was our senior senator and chairman of Senate Finance, one of the most powerful senators in the U.S. Senate. It was so big that they, under what we call the old bridge, they had to sink the barge, lower the barge, so it would make enough clearance under the bridge to get the power plant.
So the bridge was too low.
Right,
for it
was built low, and Tymen told Senator Long, he said, the story I've always told is in Baton Rouge, Exxon has the largest oil refinery, I think the second largest in the world, is in Baton Rouge, right before you get to the old bridge, which I think it's called actually the Huey Long Bridge.
Yeah.
But the story was, at the time, it was Standard Oil, and they threatened to move because of whatever issues they had with Huey Long, who was Russell Long's father at the time and governor. They had issues and were threatening to move the plant upriver. And so when he built the bridge, the old bridge, the Huey P. Long Bridge, he built it lower than the other bridges so it would prevent the ocean-going tankers moving upriver. So
he intentionally built a low bridge.
Yeah, yes. And Tymen asked the senator, he goes, that's what the story I've always heard. And the senator said, I don't know if that's true or not, but it does sound like my daddy. So I thought that was kind of an interesting little tidbit on Vidalia.
And so Vidalia has that hydroelectric plant.
Yeah.
But the barges that are getting there have to sink
right
below that bridge in Baton Rouge.
To get it under that old, and then they had to refloat the barges. So,
yeah, yeah.
And I know your next trip, you're visiting St. Francisville, which is just north of Baton Rouge. And St. Francisville is a very, very historic town. I think it's really known for several things. And I know a lot of plantation homes, including the Myrtles, which is called probably the most haunted home in America. So I don't know if you're going to visit there or not, but but also something, I don't know, a lot of your listeners may be birders, but I think it was 1821, a young man was hired as a tutor for a young lady that lived in what was called the Oakley House. And that tutor liked to go out in the woods and look at birds and shoot birds because his goal in life was to have the complete painting, a complete book of paintings on all of the birds in North America. And that tutor's name was John James Audubon. So
I've heard that name before.
Yes. And so they say about 30, he was there for a year, and about 32 of the paintings in his book were actually painted in St. Francisville. And also there, you know, on a side note, there's also a new bridge several years ago that was built outside of St. Francisville over the Mississippi River called the Audubon Bridge. And it created some controversy because we do have traffic issues along in Baton Rouge. And there's been efforts to build another second bridge in Baton Rouge or a third bridge. And there was some controversy about this bridge, the Audubon Bridge, because it doesn't really have a whole lot of traffic. And the joke around the capital was the reason it's called the Audubon Bridge is because it ought to have been built in Baton Rouge. So that was, you know, they're still working on getting another bridge in Baton Rouge to help with the traffic. And I know going down a little farther west in Patterson, and Patterson is a really interesting town. The mayor, Rodney Grogan, is one of our longtime district vice presidents, very progressive mayor, done a lot of good in Patterson. And in an area kind of on the south end of the Chaffalai Basin, and I kind of like to shoot, take photographs. And one of the things I love to go to Patterson in the Morgan City area is for the annual Eagle Expo. A lot of bald eagles around in that area. And black bears too, and so it's again for birders, maybe recurring theme. But yeah, the along the Chaffalai Basin in that area, you see a lot of the bald eagles, and there's also the Waddell Williams Airplane Museum, Aviation Museum, and I think his name was Jimmy Waddell was also back in the 1920s, 1930s, when I guess folks were tinkering with hot rods. He was hot rodding airplanes, and he held the, for a time, was the first person to get an airplane up to over 300 miles an hour.
Wow.
And so if you have a chance to go to that museum, I've been several times, just some beautiful, beautiful airplanes, these racing planes that they're in there. So I highly recommend that. And then moving on to Westlake, going up into Calcasieu Parish, they were just devastated by the hurricane, both Hurricane Laura and Delta. And I remember talking to the mayor. He wrote out Hurricane Laura into City Hall while he was in there in his office. Hurricane Laura, I guess you could say, how would I put it, created a new entrance into City Hall in his office. And when I saw the pictures, I mean, floor to ceiling with brick wall.
Not an intended construction project.
No, I mean, you could drive a truck through that hole. So he indicated it was a harrowing experience. But Mayor Hardy, who sits on our board as a vice president at large, has done an amazing, amazing job along with the other mayors in Calcasieu Parish of getting their cities back up and running. And also, Calcasieu is seeing a great resilience and investment in the petrochemical industry and billions of dollars in chemical plants and Sasol. And so they're seeing, I guess, the positives of those investments and the minuses with increased congestion. But I think just the investment's really going to help those areas in the long run. Then I guess Grand Cane is the next stop. And that's just about 30 minutes south of where I grew up in Shreveport. But great little town. I always brag to small town folks when they want to talk about revitalizing their Main Street. It's go see Mayor Richardson and go check out Main Street in Grand Cane, because I think it's a great, great template. And a little trivia fact that the high school in Grand Cane was the first high school in the state of Louisiana to be accredited, public high school.
Okay.
So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But no, yeah, you're going to really enjoy going around to some of these communities, and I'm very proud of them. So
you'll have enjoyed my trip so far, and looking forward to going to the next one right now. So.
Great.
All right.
See you
John, we'll talk to you later.
All right.
So small towners, let's learn more as we go to our fourth small town in this 5-episode road trip series in the state of Louisiana. Today, we visit a small town in southwest Louisiana that has had to deal with some big storms recently, and we talk with a mayor that came out of retirement and dealt with some financial storms in his community and is seeing the sunshine on his small town in more ways than one. We're going to go talk with Mayor Bob Hardy in the small town of Westlake, Louisiana. Come go with me.
Growing up in coastal Georgia, I only thought I lived in a small town. As soon as I graduated high school, I moved to the big city of Atlanta for college and to start my life. But life is a journey, and I ended up in Ocilla, Georgia. Population 3,400, We've got two traffic lights here. We're not looking to get a third anytime soon. Some years later, the people of Osceola made me their mayor. Man, I love living in a small town. Other folks do too. This is the Small Town Podcast, and I'm your host, Mayor Matt Seal of the great city of Osceola, Georgia.
Small Town Podcast is sponsored by the Douglas Coffee County Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Authority. Our nation is going through an incredible transition right now. There's a mass migration to small towns and rural communities. People are seeking out vibrant communities with great entertainment, recreational opportunities, low cost of living, and strong local economies. If that sounds like something you would like to find, then I invite you to discover the city of Douglas and Coffee County, Georgia. Visit coffeegachamber.com to find out why the Douglas Coffee County community is a great place to visit and an even better place to call home. All right, I'm in a conference room just off of the mayor's office in the City Hall of Westlake, Louisiana, and I have the pleasure of sitting with the current mayor of Westlake, Louisiana, Mayor Bob Hardy. Mayor Hardy, thanks for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Matt, thank you for coming to the city of Westlake. Well, we've been looking forward to this for about a year now. The LMA offered, and I thought it'd be a great idea to put our little town out there, let everybody know what we have.
Well, I got the chance to meet you at the Midwinter Conference at beginning of 2020, and neither one of us would have predicted what the rest of 2020 was going to look like at that time.
Not at all.
I think, in was that February? February 2020?
Yeah.
So it didn't surprise me to see Westlake's name on the list of this series LMA is doing on small towns.
We've come a long way in our 6 years.
Yeah,
You know, I came from industry. I had worked 20 years at United Gas Pipeline. I had left there, went to ConocoPhillips, and ended up with Phillips 66 as a retiree.
Okay.
I retired back when I was 58, and the city was in a pretty bad financial position.
Well, even before we get to that, let's even back up further, because I kind of have a standard question I ask. Were you born in Westlake, Louisiana?
Yes, I was born and raised here. I've only moved three times in my life.
And was it just a block away from the last
place?
About
a mile and a half to the west and a mile back to Westlake. And a half a mile, not even a half a mile, about a block and a half when I built my new home on Linda Drive.
Okay.
I'm married to Janice Peck. We have three kids. I've been here all my life. I'm 65, be 66 next month.
So. Now, I found this out from last time I was here, and this happens in Georgia too, but sometimes there's school consolidation. So where did you go to high school?
I went to high school back when Westlake had one school.
Okay.
And it was the junior high that we have this year now.
Okay. So same.
They built a new school in 69. So I only attended Westlake High School. Then I got out 1 year to Western Heights for my sixth grade year.
Uh-huh.
And then I went to junior high at S.P. Arnett, the new junior high at the time. I went there from 7th, 8th, and 9th. And then I went 4 years to Westlake High, and I graduated from Westlake in 1973.
And what'd you do right after high school?
I actually went to college for 1 year, found out that just wasn't for me. And
it's
I ended
not for
up,
everybody.
It wasn't. And I went to work for United Gas Pipeline.
Yeah, that's
and
where you had your career.
It was a good career. After 20 years, they wanted to restructure. I'd worked my way up to the pipeline superintendent, and I left there and went to ConocoPhillips a year later. So I put 20 years out there and retired when I was 58. I've never had to travel more than 2.5 miles to any job I've ever had.
Yeah, always right here. Well,
here.
I get the impression I asked you when I was coming around, I saw the flame from a refinery. I said, is that a refinery over there? And you just laughed. I said, yes. Oh, yeah, they're everywhere.
Yes, there's a lot of refineries. It just so happens that all the major refineries are outside the city limits of Westlake. So we get help from them through grants and helping, but no tax money dedicated to the city of Westlake. So here in Westlake, in the surrounding area, industry is our lifeline. My grandfather, my dad, me, and now my son would be all retirees from the ConocoPhillips plant.
I was just going to ask I'm not trying to put you on the spot for statistics, but it seems like with the way you responded when I said, is that a refinery over there?
a good portion of the jobs are oil and gas.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Now, oil, gas, and chemical. They make a lot of plastics, the ethylene plant, Sasol refinery of South African, big company called Sasol. They just expanded and built a $13 billion expansion across the street.
Wow.
There's pros and cons for it, but you know, overall, the Calcasieu Parish is getting rather rich over it. And we're gaining because of now that it's over with, people are going to want to live close to it.
Mm-hmm.
And we've expanded a lot. We had we did a lot of changes in the last 6 years. From where we came from, we were on the legislative auditor's list for being shut down.
Mm.
We were on the naughty list.
Yeah.
And I happened to hire a great CPA named Jerry Milner. It came to me after he retired the next day.
Yeah.
And has really helped me tremendously in the financing side of the city.
Now, was that when you were first the
when
mayor?
When I became mayor.
Now, you mentioned to me earlier, because I want to talk about the progression of this. You were on council before that?
Yes.
I was elected
to council in 2003.
Okay. And what made you decide? Because at the time, if I got the timeline right, you were still working with ConocoPhillips.
I was still working at ConocoPhillips at the time. And a good friend of mine was on the council. And at that time, we ran at large, top five vote getters.
Okay. And so you got five council members.
Yeah, I got five council members all at large. Now we're in a dedicated seats, A, B, C, D, E.
Okay. So you have
districts. You're still at large.
Oh.
You still run citywide.
Okay.
But you have to say, I'm running for seat D. And it's helped because it leaves a little bit of continuity.
I got you.
If one person decided to run against the five, they're doing a great job, then we're all out there pounding the streets, knowing that there's only one going
to
lose.
In that case, you'd have to identify your challengers.
You have to identify your seat you want to run for now.
But the seats are not determined by a district.
No, they're citywide.
So everybody could be in the same neighborhood, even.
Yes.
Two of our councilmen
live within two blocks of each other.
Okay. So when someone's running against an incumbent, they're identifying, I want that one.
They got to run this. And normally what has happened since this is done is somebody gets off and the ones that want to come to the council run for that seat.
Instead of trying to run against everybody.
They decide to pick a fight. But usually in small towns like we're at, you know, if the top three, like in 2003, I ran and I won. And then we changed it to that setup. Just because one person decided and then all five of us are out there knowing that one that signed up could not be elected in no way, shape, or form. So we changed that. So in 2003, when I was elected, in 2007, I was unopposed.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2011, I was unopposed.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was getting out after my 12 years on the council. Really had no aspirations of being a mayor, but I had the right people come ask me. And I knew the city was financially in a bad position. I didn't realize it was this bad when I got here. But overall, we were about $750,000 upside down.
Even before you go into more details, you just said something. I know we're going to make a good point because a lot of people don't think of it like this. And Louisiana, I'm sure, has got all kinds of differences from Georgia, as I've discovered. But I know people would listen to what you just said and say, well, wait now, that man was on council. How was he not aware? And the things you deal with as a council member coming in to make policy decisions.
You're right.
So talk about that a little bit.
The reason that was the previous administration. There's the Dudley Dixon, the mayor that had been here for 30 years or better when I got elected, brought me into his office and said, Bob, I'm glad you're on office. I'm glad you won. You're going to do good, but let's clear something up. This is your three things that you are in charge of as a councilman. You're in charge of the resolutions, what you do and don't support, your laws, your ordinances. You're going to vote on all those, and you're going to have the budget. But there'll be a budget committee, and I present the budget. Okay? Well, all that works real well under that mayor. But when the next mayor comes in and makes the decision that he has two councilmen on that committee, they just give him whatever, and it really wasn't an open book. When I came in, I changed auditor, I changed my legal counsel, I changed my finance director, and we just restructured to let everybody know that the city of Westlake is not owned by the mayor. When they write their bill for the city of Westlake, it's not the city of Bob, it's the city of Westlake. So, you know, and we got a lot of trust in it. Now, we took some deep steps when I first got here to find out we were in that deep of shape. You know, owing $857,000 of accounts payable and you only had $1.2 in savings. you're down basically March the 1st of 2015. We had $300,000 of total money, savings, that's digging in the couch for the change. $300,000. Can't run a city on $300,000.
What's your annual? Well, what's roughly your annual budget, just to give people a scope there?
Budget's about 12, 13. We got $1.8 million police department, a $1.6 million fire.
Right. So $12 or $13 million annual budget. You had $300,000.
I had $300,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was that tight. Restructured. Did a lot of improvements. The people of Westlake, the citizens of Westlake, supported us. There were some that wasn't very happy with us having. We raised rates, Matt, for water, sewer, gas, and trash 50% the first day of office on January the 5th.
That made you very popular, I'm sure.
Real popular. had about 350, 400 people here. I presented them a letter showing them the state of the city.
Yeah.
And I asked them, I said, before you get up to talk, read this letter.
Yeah.
Because this will tell you where you're at. It's your city. It's not mine.
What's the population of Westlake?
It's a little over 5,000.
Okay.
And we have a gas business that's from Westlake all the way to Gillis. We sell to about 4,000 homes. And we had to. There was no choices. No rates had been raised in over 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
We were still operating on 2005 numbers. So when we did that, they basically righted our ship to the fact that we can make payroll. The November before I took office, I get a call, Mayor, we can't make payroll. Well, I'm as a councilman, I can't sign nothing. It's not my job yet. So we had them go pull out a couple of months of salary out of savings till I could see where we were at. Refinanced our debt from 4.8 to 2.9, extended it 1 year, thanks to Jerry Milner. But that was enough money in just that to make our payroll, $82,000 a month. So it made us, we just kind of, I guess the best thing that we did was we brought in all the department heads. And we still do it today, 6 years later. Every month, every department head meets with the council's two councilmen, Mr. Dan Rocca and Mr. Skeeter Hayes, myself and Jerry Milner, and we completely go through their budget. Every month. We had to at first because we were taking the money that we thought we had for a gas line. And no, you can't have that. We got to fix a leak on a fire truck. We got to put another. So we moved money every month to get by.
Hmm.
Since that day, we've done a tremendous a lot of things. I mean, God has blessed our town tremendously. The citizens of Westlake overall supported our effort after we raised rates in January. Come April, we were still $300,000 short in fire and police. So I went to the people and let them know, put out a lot of broadcasts telling them, y'all don't pass this tax, it's okay. But I'm going to have to trim three policemen and three firemen. So
put in perspective for them.
And that's how it was. It was all about dollars. And we're still to an open book. I'll use Westlake's mayor's office as an example. I took the desk out of the middle of the building in my office and I put it on the side. So when somebody walks in here, I spin around out of that chair, and it's straight open book. It's like, here we are. Come help me. To go over the night that we raised the rates, 350 were in this building, packed everywhere. Six people went to the mic, and four of them got to the mic and said, I didn't read the letter before I got signed up. Two got up, said, I ain't happy. I said, well, I'm not either. But I basically used the cell phone as an example, Matt. The average city bill for Westlake was about $56 for water, sewer, gas, truck, fire, police, the whole nine yards. And I asked them, everybody in here today, I'd like you to hold up your cell phone. So they all pull their cell phone out. I said, every one of those are $100 a month to talk on the phone, text, and play games. I said, let's get our priorities straight. We're going to give you water, good water. We got a heck of a system here in Westlake. We have a gas business. The gas is a business for us. That's what has supported our town since 1969 when they bought it. It's not my fault that the rates had not moved up accordingly. So we had to swallow
right.
That
you just
big,
have to all of a sudden.
We had to swallow the medicine. We had to take that big dose of medicine to go up 50%. But once we did that, now fire, police, water, sewer, gas, trash pays for itself. And since that's happened in that 6 years ago, we had a police station that was falling down. It had been there since the 50s. The only thing holding it together was the termites. So we saved money. We got Senator Ronnie Johns, got us some money from the state. We saved money. And we built a $2.8 million police station a year and a half after finding the city where we were at.
You said earlier, you said you had to raise the utility rates on pretty much day one.
Yeah.
And then separately, farther down the road, you were talking about
separately, we went out to the people and let them know.
And that was a referendum?
And that was they had to vote on it.
And that was for police and fire.
And
I think that's a smart move because, before I say this, let me ask the result. It sounds like things went your way. How did that vote go?
Because 70%, both of them passed by 70%
in favor.
Two different votes.
Okay, now I can say because I would have looked stupid if it went the other way. But
yeah,
I think if you tell people here's what this gets you, and I know this is pain, and nobody wants to pay more taxes, but if you directly correlate it with here's what you're going to get for it, or here's what you're going to not have anymore if we don't
and,
do
and
this,
what
and
we
that
have
sounds
found
like
out
what you did
is most people that are out there complaining. And then the Facebook stuff and all this, most of them just don't really quite understand what we're doing. Sure. So we tell them point blank, every lady here, I passed out 4 boxes of business cards with my cell phone on it. I'm a small town, man. Everybody knows me. I mean, I get a call one day about the grass being not cut far enough. Can you get your contractor to cut 4 more feet by my yard? Because that's the way I want. From a lady. While I had a lady from Baton Rouge in my truck going, you get calls on grass? I get calls on everything. Small town, buddy. They all know me.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to hide. I've returned every call. I don't hide. Come here. We'll show you where you're at. So we built a trust. I mean, really did. What it showed is, you know, they supported our effort. Since that day, after raising the rates, like I said, we built the police station, which is $2.8 million. We have that new police station going. We had a developer come in, and they bought 165 acres around our golf course. The city of Westlake built a golf course. We never could get enough money to get the clubhouse done. We knew it. We felt like we'd be 2 or 3 years. We were like almost 18. Mm-hmm. Now we're building a brand new $5 million clubhouse.
Wow.
It's going to have a dining in it. It's going to be very, very nice. I'm really proud after all this time, the last 2 months, even with the hurricane, 2 hurricanes, and COVID-19, the golf course has been in the red for 12 years, and now it's in the black. Is it totally done? No. We were subsidizing close to $400,000 a year using riverboat money.
Wow.
Well, riverboat money kind of went away due to the contract that was previously signed before me. And we're now in the gaming pool. That's a long story. The Calcasieu Parish voted gaming in Louisiana in Calcasieu Parish. And I think the Calcasieu Parish police jury and state and city of Lake Charles did the right thing. They made a gaming pool. Mayor Dixon decided not to get into that pool because he had a real good contract and agreement with the Isle of Capri at the time. That was giving us about $1 million a year. Well, 5,000 people live in Westlake, 5 miles square. And then if he would have went into the pool where he was at that time, he drops to about $400,000 a year.
So he's doing better the way it was.
So politically, he could not because he was raising rates, doing what he had to do. Prior to me, we felt like there was 3.5. You know, you asked me the question, being on the council, why would I not know it was in that bad a position? Again, that's given to you by the mayor. You only get what you see on paper. It wasn't right. We felt like there was $3.5 million in the riverboat fund. We wanted to build the clubhouse. Let's do something. There was only $300,000. They had been pulling $1 million a year. You can do that if you can put it back. But there was no way to put it back.
But if you pull it and then can't put it back.
And you can't pull it back, and you do that 3 years. Mm. Previously to me, Mayor Dixon left us $6.8 million in reserve and $1.8 million in our general fund. And when I got here, we had $600,000 in general fund, $857,000 of accounts payable in the back, $1.2 million in reserve, and a debt of $1.6 million due in April. So we were upside down by $750,000.
And you've turned a good bit around. I want to talk about some of the projects you and I have already mentioned, because I think there's just a list of things that you've done is exciting. I also want to talk about the hurricanes and it's kind of your recovery. You've already given me the tour of City Hall, and we'll go through that again and put it on social media for everybody. But I want to ask this question. It's kind of, I guess, a two-parter. What was it that made you decide to run for city council? And then what was your motivation? I know you already said some people kind of came to you and convinced you, but you were about to leave. You were fine. You didn't sound like you had any political ambitions to do anything else. No. You weren't even going to run for council again.
No, I was bailing out.
And some people came and convinced you. And so what was your motivation in both of those instances?
I guess it goes back to what my wife told me on my way home from this barbecue where I ended up being the chicken. I told her when we were going out there, I said, we probably don't want to go to this because I know what they're going to try to do, convince me to run for mayor. And Jan is her name. I said, Mom, I really don't have any aspirations of that. And I know it's in bad shape. I just don't know how bad. And on the way out there, she tells me, well, just tell them no. So on the way back, I have 7 grandsons. And all 7 of those grandsons live in Westlake. My 2 daughters and my son both live here. And my wife says, well, you are retired, and you know you can straighten it out. Why don't you go up there and straighten it out for them? Do you think you can win? I said, yeah, I think I can win. The question is do I want it? And I ended up running, and I won 68%. Didn't get in the votes till I didn't sign up for election like maybe 2 weeks before I finally decided to run for it. Has it been a lot of fun? No. Overall, it's been very, I guess the way to put it is, we've done so well because I got the right team around me. And I got a great council. My council was brought in when I got elected because we weren't in office. There was only one returning, and we could have him and the 4 not in office in meetings. And I explained to him where we were at. And I basically told him this: if we don't do this, we're going bankrupt. If we don't raise the rates Monday night, as soon as we get here, you're going to get sworn in, and you're going to make the toughest vote you'll ever make for your 4 years. They all didn't think they could get reelected. Every one of them was reelected. 4 of them unopposed.
So there were 5 council members. You stepped away from your seat, so we knew that one was going to be open. Right. But 3 others also. So you had 4 brand new council members.
4 new council.
You'd been on council, but you were a new mayor. So new mayor, 4 new council members, and 1 incumbent.
And the key is, like Dudley told me, Mayor Dixon told me, I'm the administrator, and you're the legislative side of this. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to ask you not to get in my way, and I'll give you anything you want. And he did. The man was very honorable, but it was his job. It's just like me being mayor. What they get is as good as the accountant. My accountant could go in there and tell them councilmen that he just bought the eastbound lane of the I-10 bridge, and they would say, what did we get for it? I know it's got to be a good deal, okay? But that's back to open book, honesty, and straight up.
Yeah,
we didn't hide nothing. We've never hid anything from anybody. But compared to where we were to where we're at today, I'm in year 6. I really wanted to take it from bankruptcy to good. And I kind of could have done it in these 2 terms. It's not going to happen. It won't be where I want it to go unless I run for 4 more years. And that's really going to boil down to my wife. I worked hard, and she did too, to let me retire early. And I retired at 58. Well, I'm 66 next month. So do I want to stay till I'm 72? I don't know that. I really don't. If I was a betting guy, I'm going to tell you I'm probably going to stay again because I want to finish what I started. But if the right person came up here and says, I got this, and this is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to continue.
You wouldn't mind handing the
baton?
I wouldn't
mind letting them have it. Because, you know, when you retire at 58, you go back to work at 60 and a half.
Yeah, this isn't retirement, is it?
not exactly retirement. No. My son said, Daddy, this is an IQ test. You left there making this amount of money, and now you're making this. That's half the pay with a whole lot more responsibility. So you always told me, Dad, when I grew up, you know, better job, better pay, and better things for your family. I did not take the job for money.
No.
But it made me, I guess, a little more effective, because I told them in my first 4 years, I changed the count. I changed the whole atmosphere here at City Hall. I had 14 or 15. Now I have 9.
Mm-hmm.
We got rid of the extras that were, everybody else just started pulling up the load. And I explained it to Public Works, Fire, and Police just like this. I believe in less people, better pay with the technology today. And that's where we went to.
And creating efficiencies, that's right.
Efficiency. Yeah. We got my new police chief, Will Rye, was new when I got here too. He was brand new. Young man was only about, I want to say 38, 39 years old. Never had been a chief or nothing. He had a big, long learning curve. But since that day, he's come a tremendously long way because of Jerry Milner. He's taught him how to run his money. How do you run your office? Everybody in Westlake that worked here before thought if you come out with a $10 million budget, there's $10 million in that bank over there to run on. It's day in and day out, just like your house.
I'd say it doesn't work that way.
It don't work that way. And I had to explain that to Chief. I said, Chief, if your air conditioner quits at your house, where are you going to go get it? Well, I guess I'll have to go take it out of my savings. Good. Well, we don't have one.
Right.
We got $300,000
yeah.
total money. So we're going to run as lean as we can. We're going to go and work smarter. We're going to buy better equipment. We had a tremendous amount of help from our fire district. We're in a district with a corporate endeavor agreement with the parish. The fire board in our area, I went to them and told them, I'm 300 short. And I got to cut 3. And we doing the corporate endeavor, so they would have lost 2. They instantly said, no, you ain't doing none of that. We'll give you that. So they helped me.
Yeah.
The rec board helped. The police jury helped. I needed computers. Our computer system was DOS when I got here. It took 4.5 hours to pull one set of 3 bills.
Wow.
And now we pull that in about a minute. And we shoot it to Lafayette. We don't print anymore. We just send it straight over there. They printed stuff and all. We'll cut that out.
Yeah.
So we trimmed. We went contract meter servicing, reading our meters. We were having 3 trucks, 3 people, 3 retirement. And now I hire a guy to Lafayette. He comes over here 3 days a month and reads our meters and sends it to us in an email. So
yeah.
We've trimmed a lot of things out to reduce. But probably the best thing that's happened is last month at our council meeting. Well, I'm sorry. We were supposed to have our council meeting yesterday and had to cancel it. But the council will find out that we started with $12.2 million in debt, and we've paid off 56% of our debt in 6 years, built a new police station, new clubhouse. We're gaining residents because of D.R. Horton buying this. D.R. Horton is the builder. Got a big developer out of Lafayette, Marion Uter, came in, bought 165 acres of land around our golf course. We put the golf course in knowing that people want to live on a river or they want to live on by a golf course.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you tell me where that you can go in Georgia and buy a $250,000 house on a golf course with a recreation department we have, you ain't going to find it. And great schools. Like I was telling you, Matt, our schools – we have 4 schools, 2 elementary, a junior high, and a high school. We're a 3A school. For like Texas, that'd be 2A. I mean, really, yeah. we're relatively small.
Everybody's got different
ways
to do
it. But I'll tell you up front, our schools get money off of industry because they're in our parish. We had the first turfed football field. And the way it got turfed was our recreation department paired up with our school parish and says, you know what? If you let our little rec kids play football on it, we'll help you put the turf down. We got a brand new turf field for our baseball team right now that no one's played on yet. And they're fixing to dig up the girls' softball. There'll be turf this year. Our schools are rated 3 A's and 1 B. And the B is the junior high, and it's still the best junior high in the parish. So everyone's asked me, why are they moving into Westlake? I said, well, we're gaining because of our schools. Our services are very well. We have great public works. Dudley and Vernon, my engineer that's been in our city engineer for over 50 years, they prepped our city for these hurricanes. We'll cover that in a minute. When I took office, where we were and a hurricane comes, it was really, really depressing for me because I knew we were headed in the right direction. And we've been flatlining now for about a year because of all this. We're not gaining. We're not losing. but we're not gaining to get to the position. I wanted to take it from bankruptcy to money in the bank, and here you go, and let it ride. And it's going to take 4 more years or the right person anyway to do that.
It's time again to check in with Karen White, the executive counsel of the LMA, to discuss how the trials and tribulations of the past year may actually serve to benefit small towns in some ways.
Hey, Karen.
Hello, Mayor Matt. Good to see you again.
There's a conversation that I've had several different versions of, and I'm willing to bet that you have
no,
to.
No, come on. You hardly ever talk. I don't.
With the pandemic, and now it's you know, been a year, while I would never have wished this on anybody, nobody would, I don't think, no rational person, but it's actually creating this interesting opportunity for rural communities, for small towns, because it is making people look at small towns, giving them a second look or a third look, making them think about it more to live, to invest, to grow a business, to start a second business or expand a business, because dense populations now have a disadvantage because of you know, the coronavirus and a pandemic. And now when people talk about, well, this could happen again, people start to think, okay, maybe living in the biggest, most populated, densely populated city might not be the best idea, or at least there's other alternatives. What do you think that means as far as, you know, opportunities? And when I've talked about this before, I know that some small towns are going to see this, grab hold of it, and benefit from it. Other small towns are going to, if they have the batten down the hatches, let's wait till the storm blows over and then we'll figure things out, they're going to miss the opportunity. Mm. So obviously there's something on the part of the leadership in most cases of the towns. But what are you seeing as far as like the opportunity or things that are happening in Louisiana that kind of reflect that idea?
Absolutely. And it's such an interesting discussion to have, because as what was initially, I think everybody sort of hoped, okay, well, we're going to stay home for a few weeks
right.
and this thing's going to pass. And as it has evolved over the past year, I agree that the perception of people who live in super concentrated urban settings is changing. So I don't have all the amenities at my fingertips anymore, because the bars are shut down or the restaurants are either closed or super limited. So they're starting to see, well, I'm not getting any of the advantages for exposing myself to increased traffic, increased pollution. You know, I'm elbow to elbow with people anywhere I go. So absolutely, we've seen a trend of people harnessing their technology, however that takes shape, to move to a rural setting. And look, our earnest hope is that our members look at this as an opportunity to self-promote, shamelessly self-promote, talk about not only what you have, but what you're working towards, broadband being a big part of that, but not just broadband, you know, enhancing other infrastructure, making your town more accessible. And I think that there is a need that people have that small towns can fulfill, the need of belonging, that need of being able to breathe, but without having a safe place to raise your family. That's always a big one too, but without having to sacrifice anything. If we're all working remotely, because there's a global pandemic, then what difference does it make if I'm sitting in downtown New Orleans or I'm sitting in the village of Turkey Creek? It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. I'm still on Zoom.
Right,
as long as we have good, reliable connectivity.
All your meetings look the same.
Right. You wouldn't know the difference.
Right.
You know, as we have been traveling around, I've taken several different meetings and they have no idea. I could be, you know, especially if I don't turn my camera on, I could be anywhere. But yeah, I, again, agree with you. You would never wish anything like this to happen, but it has happened,
and
not because we will it to
effects.
Be there.
Yeah.
So why not seize on the opportunity to, I think historically over the past 4 or 5 years in Louisiana, you are already seeing a trend, right, of urban migration,
right,
of people talking up city life and saying, it's just not for me anymore. And there's so much space in Louisiana that is affordable. Again, community schooling and so many wonderful things about small towns. And so, yeah, latch on to that.
And you just said here's this trend that was already happening. There's so many trends. Remote work was a trend that was slowly going.
Right.
And this just kind of accelerated
That's
things
right.
that were already in motion. Just what was going to happen in 10 years happened in one.
I would agree with
in
that.
In so many ways.
In a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
There were a lot of different initiatives that were standing right there on the precipice. And then along came coronavirus and just shoved everybody off and said, you're innovating, But you're going to need to innovate quickly, and you're going right. to need to do it immediately.
It creates an opportunity, but right. you have to grab the opportunity, and you have right. to take care of those amenities. The broadband issue right. being probably chief among them, but then, you know, healthcare has to be, you
but
know,
look,
up
drinking
to par
water
and
is also
like
a big thing, and I know that sounds so basic, but like a lot of small towns throughout the country, Louisiana small towns have water infrastructure that is dated.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the incoming revenue hasn't always been sufficient to
right.
sustain the system.
Yeah.
So that's another thing that, along with trying to gather information and resources and empower our members to seize the opportunity for rural revitalization, we are also part of various commissions and boards to try to enable our folks to get the resources they need for safe drinking water.
Yeah.
It sounds very basic, but that is 100% a necessity.
Oh, absolutely.
So yeah, across the board, it is a matter of thinking outside the box, as they like to say, and latching onto those resources.
It'll be really interesting to sit down and have a conversation years from now and see which towns did what and
sure.
what the results were, because
I think you're going to see a marked difference
yeah.
between those who do and those who don't.
Yeah, I think so too.
And 2020 will most certainly go down as one of the worst years ever in terms of tragedy and natural disasters and public health disasters. But I think it's also going to be known as a year that marked a sea change in the way that people live and work. And I don't think you ever go back from a change like that.
No, it's definitely a turning point. It just depends which way people are going to turn.
Which way you turn,
yeah.
I agree.
So we'll see.
Good to see you again, my friend.
Always.
Irwinomics is the producer of Small Town Podcast. We also handle digital production and marketing for small businesses that help small towns survive and thrive. In today's global and very digital world, your digital presence is just as important as your physical presence, if not more so. Irwinomics helps clients with all aspects of digital communications, from website creation and maintenance, social media management, email lists and newsletters, digital content creation, including audio and video production, and making sure that all of these things are working together to build your business beyond the city limits and county lines, so you can focus on keeping your small town community strong and vibrant. For more information and to see how Irwinomics can help guide you in growing your business, go to Irwinomics.com or contact us through Small Town Podcast. That's IRWINOMICS.com. Irwinomics. Helping small town business thrive.
And when you said that earlier, I mean, everybody in the whole planet knows that 2020, because of COVID-19, just
yes.
put a standstill on so much.
Yeah.
And not only did we have a global pandemic that affected us all, you guys had some pretty severe hurricanes, two major hurricanes within 6 weeks of each other. It was the
yes.
craziest hurricane
yeah.
season. I think Louisiana got maybe the brunt of it all.
Laura hit Westlake. We were in the right front quadrant, the worst place to be, right through the town.
I'll say this just to make sure, because not every so many people in the audience that are from places other than Louisiana. So I'll assume you corrected this is wrong. The city of Westlake, or town of Westlake is named Westlake.
City of Westlake.
It is city. Okay, sorry.
I mean, no
I didn't make sure. That's right. That's right. You're 5,000.
That's right.
Your public works director earlier said he thought it was a little less than that, and y'all were rounding
it
up.
It was 5,600. He don't know. I just told Doug the correct number a while ago.
Okay. So the city of Westlake, I would think, is named because it is west of Lake Charles.
Right.
And so that's
the lake
where we are.
Of Lake Charles, not the city. The,
right, right, right.
The lake of
lake.
Lake Charles. Right.
So everyone, right. I think Lake Charles got a lot of attention by being the center point.
Oh, yeah.
But it's because, like I always tell people, you don't talk about all the small towns that get mm-hmm. heavily impacted. You find the biggest city you can mm-hmm. and say, when here, even if it wasn't
now,
the epicenter.
Now, Mayor Hunter and Mayor Danahay over in Sulphur, we're kind of in between the two. We're right on the interstate.
Sure.
We're about 35 miles by the Crow Flies to the Gulf of Mexico,
mm-hmm.
straight off the Gulf.
So you are just not too far from the water the hurricane
and there's nothing
comes
between
off
us.
Yeah.
It's just nothing
yeah.
but marshlands until it hits I-10. And then when it hit Westlake, myself, my councilman, Jeremy McCrier, and my son and my nephew were here in City Hall with me that night.
You were in this building.
Yeah, we were sitting right where you're sitting is where my nephew was. I was on the other side of the room. And at 1 a.m, I thought the roof was coming off.
Yeah.
It was just making all kind of racket. And we got a metal building, brick, veneer. And I walked through about 1 a.m, and I'm staring at the public works over in the utility side, and we have a drive-through window. That's another thing during this COVID. Our building was set up nice. That's back to Dudley and them doing it right. We had a drive-up window, just like a bank. So we shut the building down, did everything
still able
through
to conduct
the window.
Business.
So we just kept running. When the hurricane hit about 1 that morning, I walked up there in a 30-foot section of wall. I watched it fall in. I couldn't believe it that I thought that wall was moving, and I was at a flashlight, and next thing I know, it came into the building. It collapsed, the 30-foot section. So, but when the worst part, when it hit that, that's one thing, but it pressurized the building and blew the entire front glass off the building up front, and it took out the south part over up in the peak area. That all blew off because it loaded it up. We had 150-mile-an-hour wind blowing straight up through the building. Now, we're over here on the west side thinking, this ain't bad. You know, we got that big brick wall back there. We're protected. When we get up that morning, that brick wall was gone. It done blew out. So the entire half of the hurricane blew through the building and out the front. And what saved the building was, there again, Mayor Dixon and their knowledge of what they were doing. Our building is set up for two-story. So there's a concrete deck halfway down this building, all the way to the front to the south. All the two-thirds of the building, basically, there's a concrete slab up there. So when it blew out, it blew through the top and protected the bottom side. Because we sat here through the rest of it thinking, we're good.
So a brick wall on the part that wasn't built like that is what collapsed, and all the glass blew out, but the concrete section, because it was built a little stronger.
Well, the concrete section is a deck out there. It's all the way across the top at 12 feet up here. There's a deck of concrete all the way through the building.
And so everything above that.
Everything above it was just attic, so it just got blowing through to the north. We didn't know that at this time.
Right,
we were
sitting
in here going, is it, what else could fall? But we're recovering. The back wall's up and bricked. The front's bricked. The sides closed in. We're hoping within 60 to 90 days we're back in operation correctly. We're running all of City Hall on the east side of the building. My secretary is in my office. My accountant and my city manager, office manager, is in Becky's. And then everybody else is in the chamber room where we normally have meetings.
And for everyone listening to the podcast, we're gonna tour through everything and take some pictures and everything, let you see, because you showed me that right before we started recording this, and it's quite a sight. How did the rest? Because that's you were in City Hall, and obviously that's a big thing you're dealing with. But talk about how devastating that storm was to Westlake overall.
Overall, we hired Crowder Gulf, a big cleanup company. We actually piggybacked off the parish, but now we have a standing contract with this group. They did an outstanding job for us. We hauled off a little over 330,000 cubic yards of debris in a 5-mile square town. Probably about a $7 million cleanup. Due to the fact you have to have a monitoring system, which is Tetra Tech monitored it. We have a contract with them now. So the next mayor won't have to run through like I did trying to find a contract at midnight trying to get somebody here to clean it up. He'll have a contract. He or she will have a contract set up. It's good for 4 years now, 3 to 4 years. And now we'll just call them, tell them, come get it. We cleaned up. We took a pretty good hit. There wasn't a light pole standing. The energy company, which is Energy, they did a phenomenal job. I don't know how they got us back this good. We were fortunate enough when Rita came 15 years ago, Mayor Dixon and my engineer, Mr. Vernon Meyer, they started putting in generators every year. Generator, put it on this, put it on that. We had a generator on everything except the porta potties. We had one on every utility building, city hall, fire, police. The new police station got a natural gas one, so he didn't have to worry about diesel. It worked really well for him. So we were going through diesel pretty tough, but we pump our sewer to a centralized sewer plant over the other side of Sulphur in Carless. So we have to force main, but we had pumps and generators at a generator site at every one of those lift stations. And Doug Fleming, my public works director, and that group did an outstanding job. We never lost water pressure.
So you never went down on your basic services?
No. Wow. We kept our gas, naturally kept going. Had a lot of leaks, a lot of plugs. We had 250 plumbers' plugs out there and a bunch of pipes that we've had repaired now over the last 6 months. Water, it ripped water lines out, trees crawling over. but we never lost water. We're real fortunate the way Dudley Dixon, Mayor Dixon, and Vernon set our city up for this. We never lost our water pressure. We didn't have to go on a boil advisory. We just kept running. Sewer kept running. Generators at every major site. We went through a lot of diesel. We'd go through 5,000 gallons of diesel every 3 days. But we kept running. And a lot is said for our fire and our police department. When this thing happened, the police department and fire worked hand in hand. I know there's a rift between fire and police always somewhere, but not here in Westlake.
Usually a friendly rivalry, but sometimes
yeah,
not.
Yeah, it is friendly, but it's still rivalry. And I sat them both in here and told my fire chief, I said, look, Mayor, the chief of police is an elected official, and you're appointed. So if you two can't get along, there's only one of you got to go. I can't control him, but I can control you.
That's a little different
and
than
they,
Georgia, yeah.
They bust out laughing, and now they're next door to each other because the fire department was over by the high school, and now we had the land. Dudley and Emmett planned to put the fire, the police by it, and we've got it built there. And there's always when we're going to put the fence up, where we're going to put
right,
that.
Right.
But I want to tell you, the two of them and our fire chief, Chief Piku, has been here through Hurricane Rita. So he was familiar.
Right.
And I give him a lot of credit for me looking good because Jock knew what we needed. He done been down the road. Don't let this happen.
Yeah.
Make sure we got this. Make sure. If I got a problem, I'd call Chief. Hey, Chief, you got water? Sir, I got 24 pallets of water in the fire station. You know, oh, yeah, good,
he,
man.
He was ready.
But we really didn't have – we were fortunate enough on one end – but yes, we had 20-something buildings damaged. Every fence went down. If City Hall hadn't just blown up, life would have been a lot better. But it's also when the coronavirus come, we ended up having reduced workforce because sales tax was so low.
Mm-hmm.
So we said we got to cut $1 million out of our funds and salaries. We don't have it. So we went to every department head and said, everybody here's got to reduce by three. I was fortunate here in Westlake at City Hall. I had a couple of them real close to retirement. So I went to them and said, if you can retire, in order for me to trim, and we were under emergency, so I could kind of do what I wanted
to
do.
Flexibility on giving
flexibility
them full benefits.
Was there for me to say, I need you three to retire. Personally, if you don't, I'm going to cut three people. And where we're at today, I don't have to cut the low end. I can cut who I want. So you're going to save some people's job if you'll go ahead and retire. They were ready.
Yeah.
Police department, same thing. Three of them was sitting there waiting to go. We just kind of helped them go a little quicker.
Sure,
but we ended up reducing three in every department. I wasn't going to reduce, be honest. And then my accountant says, you're making everybody else. I said, you're right. I got to find three too. So I did. I knew what I had here. And who I've picked that's left, I had a meeting with them and let them know that, look, you're the cream of the crop. I'm not hiring anybody else. We can't afford anybody else. Ma'am, you have the accounting department, and we're going to use part-time and help you with some help. We're going to eventually be able to get back to that staff when things recover.
Right.
Sales tax has actually kind of gone back up a little bit. It's getting better because of all the repair work with everything. If you want to get back to out at the golf course, building the clubhouse is about a $5 million clubhouse. I took the $3.5 million sale of land to build it because I knew when we do this, there's going to be developers coming.
Yeah.
City of Westlake back 15, 18 years ago built the Augusta Village, which is the first section of the West Trace development. West Trace is the development around the clubhouse, around the golf course. We have a fine golf course. Nike Tour has played on it. It's a championship course. It's real pretty. It's set up. They got their own. They don't have HOA yet, but they'll eventually get there when they get 75% full. Overall, this one developer over the next, it started last year. The City of Westlake's only put in four houses on average per year for 10 years. And that was all right there in the Augusta Village that Westlake spent $12 million building all the roads and infrastructure and everything around it. We had 42 houses in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
There's still 42 open lots because they were too big.
Yeah.
So now D.R. Horton's building. Last year, year before last. Okay, I lose track. We added 56 new homes in Westlake, and they were all built within a year. This year, we're going to add 111. They're already 50 into this year. Every house that D.R. Horton has that somebody can live in, they're sold right now. And it goes back to great schools, good recreation department, and good jobs. We didn't get money off of Sasol's $13 billion at first, so we're recouping on the back end. Now we're getting people to come in to live here.
The second, third tier developments.
Yeah,
we had a
big developer from up north, Mr. Brown. Mr. Brown came in and he wanted to put in an apartment complex. Westlake's never had nothing like this. It's high end. I mean, you've got a dog spa in this thing, man. We thought, yeah, right, you know. But but it's set up very nice. They run anywhere from $1,200 to $1,500 a month. In an apartment complex where there's 156 units, nine buildings. They're full today. He just brought plans in last month for five more additional buildings with another 72 houses, another apartment, 72 apartments. And then he came 3 days later and handed me a paper and said, I want to build these two on my north side. And what it's going to be, if he does it, there'll be an additional 65 small retirement homes that you got to be 60 or above to live in. And so he asked me, I said, sir, more the merrier. We annexed a section that we're fixing to get a big Circle K. It's a big one, C store. We had a little one on the corner where you got two pumps. Well, this is going to have 12 pumps. Sampson Street, that runs right through the middle of Westlake, is where all my businesses are. We're not very big. We don't own a street light. That's a state road. Parish has north, east, and west of us is Parish. State runs down the middle, and we got everything in the middle. But, you know, we had about a $7.5 million cleanup for this one storm, or two storms, actually. Delta.
Yeah, because you had Laura.
Yeah, then Delta came.
And then 6 weeks later, they ran out of names in the alphabet.
They start over. Well, here come with old Delta. It come through. But we had blue roofs, blue tarps everywhere. It took it off, and that wet more houses. And it was really depressing to watch that, too. But the city didn't take the hit it did with Laura because there wasn't any trees left. There wasn't a light pole standing in Westlake.
You hadn't had time to recover from Laura to have as
now,
much
Now, Energy did a great job, like I told you. But we've got that going our way now. Recovery's back at City Hall, putting fences back up. We're making some changes that needed to be done where we had this great 3-5 acre track of land with a big old fence around it for absolutely nothing.
And now
we're
no
just
going
to put a fence around the water tower and mow the rest. So City Hall's got to be some more work done around it.
Yeah, and let me ask it that way because you're kind of going this direction anyway. So let me push in that same direction. Everyone was dealing with the coronavirus.
Yep.
And then this area in Westlake had two major hurricanes come through 6 weeks apart in a year that you were already struggling. Sales tax was down because of the economic impact of COVID-19. So I'm not loading that on to depress anybody, but you were already saying it gives us an opportunity to make improvements. So talk about, I mean, you've already commented a little bit on how the recovery is going, so keep going on that, but also talk about the things that will come out of this. And while I know you're disappointed that those external forces have kept you from your goal of doing things in 8 years, and it might take a little more to get things where you want them as a city, what does the future look like as a result of this recovery that's taking place now? Because there are, as I like to call, green shoots that come
there
from
is.
These
there's,
kinds of periods
gonna
of devastation.
Good after all this. The only downside, it will be the blighted homes that are left because they just don't – they get their insurance money and they bail out, and then we're going to inherit them on adjudicated property and we'll have to clean up. There's going to be some
of that.
People
move on, and then you've got those dilapidated properties.
Yes, we're going to have some dilapidated, but we also had some of them that were – that are going to get new homes out of it.
Yeah.
So we're going to restructure a lot of that too. Overall, in 2 years from now – the city's going to actually be cleaner than it was because we all them opportunities of get it to the street and I'll clean your place up. That came just hoping that the federal government and the state helps me enough to pay that big debt. Like I was telling Crowder Gulf the night I signed it, I said, I'm telling you right now, I only have $2 million in reserve right now.
Yeah.
There's no way I can pay this. But I'm feeling pretty good. It will end up, will be somewhere around 90, 10. And hopefully we get some help out of the state to help us on the 10. Federal government take 90% of it. My accountant is structuring us to be there. I don't want to have to go borrow money. But you know what? If I have to, I have to.
I mean, in those kind of situations, you just have to get that work done.
Got
to
get it done.
Yeah.
We were clean. We were fortunate enough to get a big laydown yard, the Sisal Corporation, Miss Kim Cusimano. I called her in Houston. She was my contact when all this was being built. And I asked her to use about a 10-acre tract of land they have out here that was all concrete, and I mean, not concrete, but gravel, for the laydown yard to haul their equipment in.
Mm-hmm.
She let us use it. So they only had to travel a quarter of a mile per load to get it out of Westlake.
Yeah.
So within the first month, I had 70% clean. We were running 16, Crowder Gulf was running 16 trucks. And it's GPS, it's coordinate, it's really set up that no one, everybody knows we're every tree. We've had people call, historical people, I call them the hysterical people out of Baton Rouge, call and said, "What is any stump over 10 inches of oak?" Yeah, there was 30-inch oak fell over. Well, we got to know about them, and can you go measure them and GPS them? I just told her, "Ma'am, I don't have time to do that. If you'd like to come from Baton Rouge, there's a stack of them." Now, we have digital pictures of every stump and every pile at the road, at the dump site, in the truck. You come see any of that, you're like, "I got a stack of them." I was getting this is set up pretty slick, this Tetra Tech. They sent me an email every night that showed me exactly how many trucks, where they went, where they loaded, and how much was in each truck, and a digital picture of every one of them.
Technology is amazing, isn't it?
It's amazing. Technology is good. Again, that's kind of where we went when I came in here. We were still doing things like in the 70s.
You mentioned DOS.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some members of the audience have no idea what DOS is.
DOS is so old. But, you know, whenever I watched the computer screen and it looked like just a slow picture filling it up, and I came from technology out at ConocoPhillips, and I asked one of the ladies, "Is that our internet?" And they said, "Yeah, it's kind of slow." I said, "You could eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich before that screen fills up."
Yeah.
I said, "We got to change that." So we changed a lot of things in there. The ladies here at City Hall, all my ladies, have really bent over backwards. They get frustrated at times because they're dealing with the public, but they just don't know. I've been called corrupt on Facebook. Got to get him out of there. He's corrupt. Well, come up here and I'll show you every dollar that's where your money went. That's not my goal. My goal is to leave our city in a better position than it was, like anybody that should in this position. I think everybody has a time, and I guess when someone thinks it's theirs, they need to leave. And it's not mine, and I want to make sure to know that I don't want it. I want to go back to retirement. But we've come a tremendously long way. Where we're headed from here, if the developer continues building at the golf course over the next 3 to 5 years, we'll be through building because there'll be no more land available. We're landlocked. We got interstate on one side. We got industry on the west. We got a river on the east. And we got a river on the north. And we're done.
Yeah.
The West Trace development around the golf course was the only way to grow our city. People, I guess it's really strange. People think we make a lot of money doing this project. Running a town. There's not money in, money out.
No, I think more people lose money running a town than me.
Yes, yeah, I know I did. So, and I told him, I gave him an example. I said, "How much money do you think the city makes per house on natural gas by the time we pay everything it takes to get it to you?" "Oh, you're making thousands." I said, "No, we're actually making $400 a year profit on each home."
Yeah.
Because the gas is not free.
Right. It's got to come from the pipeline. It's got to come from
pipeline, and we just transport. We're not even transporting. We're tapping it and moving it. But they don't know what it takes to do that.
People think about the top line numbers and not the bottom line numbers.
Right. That's correct.
There's a lot in between that top line.
There's a lot in between that. That leak survey you got to have, and the new regulators and all the different things you have to do to maintain that system. Is it the right thing? Yes, it is the right thing for our town. I was hoping without hurricanes and all this. I was on track of building a compressed natural gas station on the interstate and sell natural gas to vehicles. But we're going to kick that back a little bit because it's just not there. It's not the right opportunity, but it was 4 years ago. If I could have got this station built, we could have had one company transfer in and take 22 of his trucks to burn natural gas. That would have doubled our gas sale for the city running two trucks, plus selling all the trucks running that interstate. We're working on every little thing that could help generate revenue. My latest deal, Matt, is Mayor Matt. I'm sorry, Matt.
No, you've been calling Matt the whole time. Okay. Why'd you switch to Mayor Matt?
I forget because I like to be called Bob. We have one section of town, which is the old section of Westlake. When I grew up, that's where it was, on the old part of town, that has just been abandoned and blighted and got a lot of, and especially after Hurricane, it tore out all them old homes and everything down there, old buildings. I've got contractors and investors looking at, and next month we will be starting an EDD, Economic Development District, for that area. It'll be a tax deal. It's not anybody that has land now will not change, but if they move in here, say we're going to build an apartment complex, we're going to have a 2-cent tax on it. 1 cent goes back to them, and one comes to the city for a tax incentive to help rebuild the old part of town. Back in 2016, I was fortunate enough to go to Baton Rouge, give a presentation about that development, and ended up getting the LSU graduate students from architects, engineers, and landscape. They took that on as a project for their year, and I have a complete book of every plan that those students did on it. It took about 5 hours to look at their plans one night. I went down there to pick up 2 sheets of paper and ended back coming with about 50. But we got a lot of developers that are looking at it from Baton Rouge. One of them's from, I think he's out of Scottsdale, Arizona. Well, that's the only quarter mile of the river that's inside the city limits of Westlake. And Eldorado bought out Caesars, and now they're building, we'll have the first land-based casino in Louisiana, half in the city limits. Where they're building it, half of that building will be in the city and the other half will be in the parish, which is a big gain for us. We'll get half sales tax, all the profits. We'll gain a pretty good lick. Well, with that happening down there, now's the time for somebody to develop on the other side of the I-10 bridge. We'd like to build a river walk down the river and have boating and stores and shops and stuff. So we got a big pie in the sky. But, you know, I have found out one thing in life is you take the bat and swing it. Every once in a while you get a hit. Well, we got the bat off. We swung it. We fouled a few off, but we moved. I just have to believe that one day, within the next couple of years, we'll be doing something down there. Got a lot of landowners that are interested in it. So we're going to see what happens.
It sounds like you've got a lot more in mind to do in Westlake than it's going to happen in 2 years. So you just
Yes, it does. It does. Yeah, and I guess really that's going to boil down. My wife will make the determined factor.
Right, right.
Honestly, when if Miss Jan says you're done, then I'm done.
Yep.
I like the job now. The first year, I kept going up here going, why did I take this on? But
why did I let those guys talk me
into this? So many people helping me. I mean, police, jury, fire, recreation. It didn't matter where we went. They knew we were in trouble, and they helped us recover. And we've come a tremendously long way.
As we wrap things up, I want to give you the same opportunity. You've kind of been doing it all along the way, but in a concise format as we wrap things up. Speak directly to the audience of the Small Town Podcast and tell them why they should at least come visit, but maybe come move to Westlake, Louisiana.
If you're looking for a retirement place, we got it. If you're under the age of 18 and you want to live in Westlake, you play the golf course free. Ladies play free every day. Our recreation department supports that. Our schools are good. We have water, and we're going to take you out and show you the river. We're close to a big, nice state park. Sam Houston State Park's about 5 miles up the road from us across the river. Our land runs right up to the edge of it before the river. Westlake is like I told them when I did a speech at Sasol. This is the land of milk and honey. this is where you get industry. We have those jobs around this industry we have is in the top 10% pay in the nation. You can come here. We have a great sporting. You can't beat our fishing. Can't beat the hospitality, and you dang sure can't beat the food. Okay. you can't see, but I'm not a thin little guy. But I'll tell you, growing up here in Westlake, we've come a long way. I am looking forward to the future, but I don't want to put our town back to where we were. It's been a hard fight. The right person come in here. We hope to lay it out on a spreadsheet and say, this is what you do. Just keep it like this, and you're going to be fine. Got great employees. Nice, good firemen, good police, public works. Those young men down there work very hard to keep all our stuff running, and they have a lot of pride in it. Not only did we get that, me and you sitting here visiting, and there's a half inch of ice outside. We ain't seen that in 40 years. And now we're going to get 3 days of 18-degree weather. Again, we had a problem with a water well. They grab up a big old battery and take off over, and they made it run. We didn't lose water. We've done well. This is a great place to grow up and have kids. And as you can tell, I'm a little prejudiced because this is where I grew up. My grandpa, my dad, me, my son, all our family lives right here. The only one that's not local as far as my family is my sister's in Houston because her husband went to work for TI Instrument. He couldn't find a TI job around here. He didn't want to go to work at a refinery. Most of it is industry, and there's plenty of it. If a chemical engineer or any kind of engineer can get a job in this area. We have a swell of tech. That's another thing. Our colleges and our community colleges called Soella Tech. They have a 2-year basic degree in plant technology now to teach them how to be an operator. And when they get through with that operator school, if you're in the top 5, you go to work before you graduate. These plants will grab up all them young kids that want to be an operator. I'm trying to convince my grandson to go take it. He's a senior this year. Where can you go? Go 2 years to college and come out starting out making about $85,000 a year as an operator. We've got plenty of them around here. Sasol, P66, Lyondell, Sitco, they're everywhere. But industry is our lifeblood, and we are getting better. We've come a long way from where we were. There's no doubt about that.
Well, Mayor Bob Hardy, thanks so much for joining me on Small Town Podcast.
I appreciate you for coming over here in this bad weather, and we're sitting in here, but we'll go out and take a look at everything else.
That's right. Now, I know you all want to get to know Mayor Bob Hardy some more, so let's ask him our get-to-know-you questions. All right, it's time to get to know Mayor Bob, or Bob. He just likes people calling Bob, so we're going to call him Bob. Mayor Bob, I got 4 questions for you to help people get to know you. I'm going to get to know you a little better after asking you these.
All right.
We'll find out about you. So the first question is, do you now have or have you ever had a nickname?
No.
Never?
Little Bob, because my mama was Bobby. That's about it.
Well, they didn't call your mama Big Bob, did they?
No, they didn't. Okay, no, she wasn't but about 90 pounds.
Yeah, so no, you're just Little Bob, the younger.
I was the Little Bob because my sister Jerry Lynn is named after Jerry. I was a Little Bob.
So born and raised here, lived here all your life, and never picked up a nickname, not in industry, not as the mayor, not on council, nothing.
Well, out of Conoco, when I got elected mayor, they called me the king, but but that was just a bunch of guys I had quit working with. So, no, I never really had a nickname except Little Bob or no, not really.
Okay. The king.
Yeah.
I'd stick with that one.
No.
All right, next question. What would be your go-to karaoke song?
Karaoke song.
You're in a karaoke bar. You're next up.
Oh, well.
You've had enough.
I've done this before.
Okay.
It was Silver Wings.
Silver Wings. Who sings Silver Wings?
I can't remember who it was, but the name is Silver Wings. I don't remember I don't know the names of them singers.
I'm going to have to look it up.
Yeah, I had a few, and I was up in actually in Bryan, Texas at a rescue training, and me and another older guy, he wanted to do it. He wouldn't do it, so I signed us up, and we sang Silver Wings. We thought we were pretty good.
So you was a duet?
Yeah, well, I just had a handful of shirts. He wasn't singing, but because I knew he wasn't going to leave me up there. Tommy Ellis was his name, and he wanted to sing, so I sang Silver Wings because I actually knew it, and I could go off the words. So.
Okay. All right. Silver Wings. All right, next question. What is, you talked about how good the food is here, what is your favorite meal or favorite dish?
Probably red beans and rice.
It's pretty simple.
With cornbread.
All right. Red beans, rice, and cornbread.
Yeah.
All right. And final question. If you could attend any concert of any singer, duo, any band, any performer of any kind, if you could attend their concert, but they are either now dead or alive, whose concert would you want to attend?
Well, I have attended Elvis. I have attended the Eagles. But the one I attended the and thought the best ever performance was I saw John Denver in Lake Charles.
Yeah.
And if I had one that I could go to today in
yeah.
here.
Yeah, right now.
It would either be,
even
it
if it's somebody it, who's it no longer with us.
It would either be Celine Dion.
Okay.
Or the girl from England, Adele.
Okay. Celine Dion or Adele.
One of them two.
You flip a coin. You can't pick between those two?
Celine Dion.
All
probably.
Right. There we go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Bob, thanks for letting us get to know you.
Yeah, no problem.
Well, small towners, that'll do it for this episode of Small Town Podcast. I want to thank Mayor Bob Hardy for talking with me. Thanks again to the Louisiana Municipal Association for inviting us back and for partnering with us. And thanks also to Louisiana Economic Development for sponsoring this series on Louisiana small towns. As always, I appreciate our season sponsors for Season 4 of Small Town Podcast, the Georgia Municipal Association, Consolidated Pipe, and the Douglas Coffee County Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Authority. Thank you all for supporting us as we explore and share great small towns. Join me next time for our final small town in Louisiana in this series. I'll talk to you soon, and y'all are welcome to come to Osceola anytime.
Small Town Podcast is an Irwinomics production. We release new episodes every other week featuring small towns through stories of the people who live and lead there. Our podcast episodes are made possible with editing assistance from Resonate Recordings, who also mixes and masters all of our episodes. You can subscribe to Small Town Podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, and the next episode will download while you sleep. You can also leave us a rating and review, which would help us reach new listeners. We would really appreciate it. Beyond our episodes, you can engage with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also learn more about us and the small towns we visit by visiting our website, www.smalltownpodcast.com. We'd love to show all you small towners out there some great images from the small towns we visit and let you know about the festivals and events you can participate in. Thanks again for listening, and we hope to see you real soon, because there's no place like Osceola, Georgia.
We stand adjourned.